The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right.
Hello! Welcome to season double number one. That's right, season 11 of Laughter Permitted. I'm Julie Foudy.
I'm Lino Zowie, and I have a big smile on my face right now. Double number one. Oh my gosh.
Let's go.
I'm going to tee you up for a story, Julie, and this story has got to be somewhere in the catalog of Laughter Permitted episodes. But Jules, if you could once again share why you wore double number one, as opposed to, as Mia Hamm put it, just 11.
You're just 11, Julie. You're not double number one, Julie. As any self-respecting seven-year-old would do, you want to be number one when you get on your first soccer team. And so I said to my coach, I would like to wear number one. And this coach said, well, that's for the goalkeepers. And I said, what? And he said, that's a number that we save for the goalkeepers, because that's how they do it in soccer. And I said, well, then I will be double number one. If you have any sense of my personality at seven, there it is on full display. Well, then I will be double number one.
If that's not a Nike commercial, I don't know what is.
I always used to remind the national team that I was double number one. And Mia would say, no, you're just 11. In her deadpan way. No, you're not.
Oh, look at this. We're already laughing. We're already laughing.
We're back.
It's a good sign. And it is so fitting to start season 11 with a player who went on to wear your exact number on the U.S. women's national team.
That's right. Actually, when I emailed Allie, do you want to come on the pod and launch us this year? She said, it's only fitting that the double number ones do it together. I was like, that's right, baby. Let's go. So y'all, Allie Krieger is in the house. I am so grateful for Kriegs making this season opener so special. It's a great conversation. Y'all know Allie from her days on the U.S. women's national team, where she won two World Cup titles. She reached 108, so she has over 100 caps with the U.S. women's national team. And this past year, she finished off her professional soccer career by going out as a champion again. Her Gotham FC squad won the NWSL championship last season, and in incredible fashion, they went from last place in 2022 to top of the mountain in 2023. So from worst to first, and it's been quite a year for Allie on so many levels, personally and professionally, and I just loved getting to catch up with her. So get comfortable listening. It's Allie Krieger. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives, and truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason, Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com.
Kick back, relax, and unwind. Let's have a good time finding the joy in life. We're smiling so bright, talking and laughing combined. Feeling alright, get comfortable listening. It's Laughter Permitted.
Kriegs, as you know, we realistically could not start season number 11 without double number ones on the pod.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Okay, set the scene, where you're at, what you're doing.
So I'm in my new place. I'm getting a fresh start and fresh energy, and it's so nice to be in a new home, and the kids are loving it. My pup is loving it, and we're just already really happy here. So I'm in the midst of setting everything up and still getting things organized, which will take probably another few weeks.
I was going to say 7 years if you're anything like me.
Exactly. But I feel like when your house is organized, a clean house, clear mind. So I have to do that as quick as possible because else I'm going to be all over the place.
Yeah.
But I'm in a new space and it's great. And I'm on the kind of in my office area that I'm setting up.
Good. Yay. Refresh. Yeah. Reboot.
Are you in the home goods space where just you're living at home goods?
Mm-hmm. And Amazon and TikTok, organizing.
Oh, right.
I guess all the organizers on TikTok really help because then they have links to all the things. And so it gets a little dangerous because Amazon can be, one-stop shop, obviously. And getting things at my doorstep really makes me happy in the moment. But then I look at the bill and I'm like, okay, I need to rein it in. I need to stop.
I love doing that stuff. I might visit Home Goods 3 times a week.
Just walking around with a coffee and just checking the scene.
Literally, my husband is like, "Where are you?" And I'm like, He's like, "Are you at Home Goods?" I'm like, "Maybe."
No, but when I go to Target, that's the worst, because even Starbucks and the Target, and then you get a coffee and then you walk around and you only go in for like eye drops and you come out with like a whole cart full of
$300 later.
Yeah.
Shit you don't need. All right. First and foremost, before we ask anything, is how are you?
Busy.
Yeah.
But I'm great. I'm honestly in a really good space mentally, emotionally. I feel like I've kind of crossed that line into the next phase where I am, still in my healing process with everything going on, but I'm really in a good space to move forward and to start, a new job and in this new broadcasting world. It's been really hard, so Jules, we're going to have to, connect at some point.
Oh, we're going to talk about that too. Yeah. I'm so happy you went to the dark side. Yes.
Yeah, I know. I'm following you. So you make it easy. I need some help. But all jokes aside, it's actually been really good because I don't think I'm really the retirement type. It lasted maybe a minute. And then I was like, this is not. I have been nonstop since the final. So it's all good things. It's a good busy.
It is a good busy, because sometimes there's that bad busy where you're just trying to avoid, thinking about things, but it's a good busy.
Yeah. And I feel personally like I'm in a really good space, much better than, obviously in August, September, October-ish. So now I'm really doing well and the kids are settled and happy. And that's really what's most important.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I think about. It's one thing, right, to go through something like that when you don't have kids, but then you add kids into the equation and it's you just got to make sure that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that was, it's really hard for them because you don't realize, even though they're young, you're like, oh, they'll be fine. They're going to get through this with us and, discovering this whole co-parenting thing. And, they're my priority. So I don't want to always assume that they're going to be okay. So I'd really try to make it as easy as I can, this process and this move and this new phase, and really take their feelings into account, more importantly than even mine, because I remember when my parents got divorced when I was really young, and I'm still, trying to, solve or heal that trauma, I should say.
Oh, interesting.
Even from that, even when you're really young, you oh, they're going to be fine. I actually am still healing from things that have occurred. Maybe you don't even realize. So I understand that, and I want them to, make sure that I, hear them and see them and, understand their feelings as well, because it's going to be tough, even though they're only 3 and 1.5.
Yeah.
Before we go into the broadcasting side of it, which I definitely want to talk about, I want to rewind to Gotham because holy shit. I mean, that season for y'all going from worst to first, what was it about the team, the group, that made it possible?
I think the locker room And it did have a lot to do with football, right? Like the actual playing, it had a lot to do with that on the field and the leadership, obviously, with Juan, which I've said, and I'm sure you guys have heard that in the media, but the leadership and the quality of the staff set us up truly for success because we had similar players the year before, right? We just had to fill a few holes. Yeah, they were, you know, big shoes to fill or big holes to fill, and we found some great players to do so. But I think just it stems from the guidance of having an identity, how to apply what the principles are on the field physically. But then for us, I'm so proud of our connection as a team and as individual players, where we could come together as human beings first and really care about each other. And I found that out quickly when I was going through exactly what I went through and the separation, you know, and the filing and everything. They just rallied around me. So that's just one example of, you know, the commitment to each other, that we wanted to make sure that everyone was okay, even off the field. The care and the concern as human beings was first. And that's rare. I don't think I've been on a lot of teams that have thought that, except maybe the national team at some points in my career. And so that was refreshing to know that you could look around the locker room and we were all connected as, you know, as friends, I should say, first. And then that translated onto the field and building those relationships. Because, you know, those relationships are so difficult
everything.
To build.
Yeah.
Just with soccer-wise. But then human-wise, that was already there. And that was so important to us, that respect, that that just translated immediately, which I think you saw in the play.
When I read the post-divorce leak team dance party story with them all just rolling in that day, you know, when you found out
3:30 right after training, because I had to cancel the presser. I had to cancel my presser.
Because you were going into your final match, right? And when I read that story and you can tell it, I was like, it told me everything I needed to know about that team. I was like, there it is. That's why they won, I think. And you just confirmed it. I'm like, the locker room.
Can you tell that story, Ellie?
Yeah, so a lot of people don't think that I did actually find out online, which was tough to read because, you know, this is my truth and my experience, and it's the truth. I was playing 11v11, and I actually had to come off the field because I remember Midge coming up and asking me to step off the field, and I thought she was, like, injured or something. I'm like, why am I having to step off the field? Like, are you okay? Like, is everything all right? Because she had been inside just getting some treatment. And had maybe just limited minutes that day. But anyway, besides the point, she comes up to me and says, there's an article out. I said, about what? I said, what are you talking about? What article about? What is this? Like, can you give me a little more info about you, about like the tea? What's going on? And she said, no, about you and Ash and your divorce. And I said, what divorce? I said, what filing? And she goes, no, it's on people.com. Like it's out. And I said, oh God, because I had kept it very quiet, obvious for obvious reasons. One, it's not a community divorce and marriage, first and foremost. It's not for everyone to know. I'm a very private person, even though, yeah, I did share my life online a lot with the kids and Ash, but I'm a very private person for this exact reason. And I value having that privacy in such like an intimate relationship with your partner. I think it's really important because it's not for everyone to know, and it's not everyone's business. So then when this came out, I was like, and immediately I kind of shut down. And I think Kelly was on the sideline and maybe Taylor, and it was Midge. And they just took me into the locker room. I didn't even say anything to the coaches. I just walked in the locker room, and then I broke down because it was the first time I had even heard of a filing.
Wow.
Yeah. And in that moment, 3 days before, you know, one of the biggest games of my life, because it could have been my last.
Yeah, because you guys weren't in the playoffs yet.
No, we had to squeak in. You know, that was a must.
That's a great point.
Really.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we tied and we got in barely, but that was to me a must win. So in that moment, it was difficult. And then I canceled all the pressers that day. I had everything lined up after training. Obviously, everyone understood because they saw it. And I just went home. And then the team didn't even have to say anything. They came right over. They just started walking in at 3 because they had meetings. We had like, you know, IDP meetings and positional meetings that day, and line meetings, I should say. And I just skipped it all. I went home, and then they just came over after. So by that time it was like 3:30. And they just kept trickling in. And I was actually having, I scheduled a fitting because I wanted to look nice for the party. And, you know, I was like, you know, this is going to be a moment that I want to remember. And I want to, you know, I want to like put myself first and for once and do something nice for myself. So I actually had my stylist come over and we were going through outfits and things, and all the girls were actually there by that time. And I would come and I would run and, you know, show them the outfit and they would be like, yeah, or like, you know, and so they helped me choose like all the outfits that, you know, that I wore for that photo shoot on that next day, which was the next day. I think it was the Thursday, and, you know, in the New York City, you know, photos. And then for the, you know, pregame walk, and then also for the after party. So I had some, you know, I had some outfits to choose, and they were like loving it. So all of them were sitting in the playroom, and I have a TV in there, obviously, for the kids, and it's right off the kitchen. So we were all, they were all just sitting on the ground on like the kids, like pillows, the kids are hanging out. They were bringing wine in and flowers, and everyone's drinking and having a good time listening to like YouTube music videos. And we all start dancing to some of them, like everyone gets up and we're just, I mean, I have videos that I'll cherish forever from that night because they stayed until like 2:30 in the morning. By the end of the night, we were all laughing and having the best time that I was like, why did we wait this long to do this? And I'm sorry that we finally have done this on my behalf. That was like such a shitty day. But I knew right then, I said, this is something special that we have here. And we're going to win this thing if we continue in this manner together and like share these moments. We're going to be just fine.
That's incredible.
They were like, we got you. We got you.
Yeah. Everybody just kept walking in because there was an appearance, I think, at a coffee shop down the street that I think some of the girls had. And right from there, they came over, and you should have seen all the shoes at the front door. It was just, it was a really, really cool memory that I'll cherish forever on such an unfortunate day, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like that reflected something back to you, Allie, as far as the type of teammate you are and have been in your career?
I knew then, because you don't really know, and I'm sure, Jules, you feel this way too, like you don't really know the type of impact you make until people, you know, talk about you in interviews, or, you know, they're celebrating you because of your retirement, or, you know, like you don't necessarily really deep down understand the impact you have on people as friends and teammates and coaches and staff until like this moment in my career. I was like, wow, like I feel almost like not embarrassed, but almost uncomfortable to a point where I was so showered with love and support. And I don't know, it almost felt like I was like, wow, this is, I never really realized. And this is nice that I have that type of impact on people, because that's everything that I've wanted to be. Like just like first a good human being and a good teammate and somebody who, you know, someone can lean on and come to for anything, and also put smiles on people's faces. Like that's really ultimately, and then obviously win championships, but that's most important to me. And so to see that reciprocated, I was like, wow, I'm going to definitely be okay.
Now I'm curious what the locker room dance party was like after you won.
It was so like, it was drenched in there. There's like beer everywhere, champagne everywhere. People are like slipping. I'm like so worried I'm gonna like, you know, tear my hamstring off because I'm like, like just sliding everywhere, and people are just like diving around, and you know, the goggles barely even worked. All the beer and the drinks were like inside my goggles.
It's like when you're scuba diving or snorkeling, you know, and you're like, these are not working.
Yeah. So we had a really good time because people were taking pictures and like, you know, it was really fun.
That was amazing too, that it was you and Pino in your final match, as close as you two are.
Yeah.
Neither of you had won an NWSL title, and of course only one was gonna take it before they retired.
Yeah.
Did you guys, you must have had so many special moments, but what is that moment and memory that shines through the most?
I think just sharing the field with her again, because I had missed her, even though it was devastating for her in the first, obviously, 5 minutes, and the way that that happened, I literally was so upset, because it changes the game immediately. You want to play against the best players. You want to play against their best team, because in the end, that's even more rewarding to win. And so I obviously want to play against the best all the time. That's just like the competitiveness in me. And the game completely changed after that. Not that it wasn't difficult, but it just... you know, you just had to shift a little bit of the mindset and the personnel and figuring that out. But it was probably just sharing the field with her again and walking out on the field with her again, because I loved it so much being her teammate on the national team and just winning with her and laughing and supporting each other and over the years and having, you know, just this deep, deep friendship that we have. And being able to share the field with her again was nice on the final day. And I'm glad that it was her. I'm really sad to see what had happened, because it's just so unfair. Life sometimes is just so unfair, even though sport is such a risk, right? You never know what could happen.
And for non-WSL fans, Megan Rapinoe got injured early on in the championship game.
It was like 3 minutes in, right? It was ridiculously early.
I mean, I remember her saying, she had walked backwards and felt like someone kick her, basically.
Right.
And she thought Bruno like kicked her from behind, and she was like, dude, what? I'm just like getting into position on the goal kick. And then she looked around and nobody was there. And she said that's when she knew. But I thought she just rolled her ankle or like, you know, just twisted it. And I said, just go tape it up. Like, you're going to be fine. I'll see you back out here in like 2 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
But then she just kind of, I saw the look on her face and the way she kind of just, you know, shook her head. And I was like, oh gosh, must have been something worse.
Yeah.
And then have to shift back into the game immediately when like,
yeah, because you feel terrible for your friends. Yeah.
Yeah. But obviously I'm a winner. So I was like, well.
Love you, Pino.
Oh my gosh, that sounds exactly.
Carter off, love you, let's
go. That sounds so much like Julie, I cannot even tell you. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry you got injured, but
I'm like, I got a job to do.
Gotta win this.
You would have done the same thing.
You would have done the same, Lynn.
You would have done the same thing.
I love it. Allie, we spoke with you back in 2020, and I remember in that interview, you brought up a piece of advice that Sue Bird gave you, speaking of Megan Rapinoe, where so Sue told you in the wake of the national team kerfuffle, is that a euphemism to use?
Yeah, I don't really know,
Whatever the word would be, as far as you no longer being on the team without really any explanation.
Yeah.
She told you to stay ready, and that proved to be correct, because then you ultimately went and won a second World Cup in 2019. I'm wondering, now that you are in this big transition phase, going from pro sports to whatever is next, if Sue's reached out or if anyone else has given you any advice for what's next.
I think the main advice that I've got, that I've received, has been just... try everything and anything, and don't just focus on one specific thing, especially because it might not work out. So test everything, try everything, do all the things that you wanted to do, and then you'll slowly like see it narrow down into something more specific. But give yourself time. You know, don't rush into anything, even though there's a lot of asks. I have to make sure that I am thinking of not only myself, but my kids. So I want to make sure that I'm present for them. So I need to make sure that anything that I do, you know, aligns with somewhat of their schedule, because that's important to me, to take them to school, to pick them up. But that's how I think of it too. There's offers that come in, or, you know, opportunities, I should say, that come in, and I have to really think about, okay, is this going to align with me and my kid's schedule? And is it going to also make me happy doing it? And who are the people that I'm going to be surrounding myself with is really important to me.
You are thinking of all the right things. I'm like smiling. I'm like, yes, yes, all those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I had a smile on my face too, because you pretty much just described Julie's trajectory, if I'm not mistaken, Jules. Yeah. After
like
her
that's
career.
All the things I exactly thought about coming into this group. That's the nice thing about you coming into broadcasting mm-hmm. is you do have that flexibility, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Minus, I will say, summers are a little bit tough because it's like World Cups and Olympics. And
I love that you're about that.
Yeah, I love that you're thinking broader too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that was the most important thing I did in broadcasting is I literally told NBC for I didn't want to call the Olympics because I'd already been calling games. I wanted to learn how to put a story together. I wanted to do features. And so my like first six Olympics I did without doing soccer. I just started doing soccer again, right? Like, and I did features and they taught me how to do all that stuff. But like to broaden beyond the soccer and learn different skill sets is going to be huge. So I love that you're thinking that way. And saying yes. Like even when you don't know, like people know they're not asking you. They're asking you because they know you can do it and that you have to learn it, right? They're not going to shove you in a position that's going to be totally uncomfortable. So
Jules,
I love that you're thinking that way. I got to say it. Be the idiot who says yes.
Be the idiot who says yes.
Thank you. I'll write that down.
That's Mary from Mary Carrillo.
Yeah. She's an amazing broadcaster herself, but that was her advice is like, I was the idiot who said yes to everything. And then I just figured it out.
Didn't you feel early on, maybe when, you know, thinking back and now I'm in my position where you were, that even if you were uncomfortable, that's when you would grow the most and learn the most, right? I mean, I feel like that's like for me in soccer too. I wasn't always the best player. I was always surrounded by the better players. And so that's what helped me get better, but I was so uncomfortable in that situation. But I said, well, listen, I have to like figure it out. But it ended up working out. So I feel like I'm gonna try to apply that too. But I'm wondering
you gotta search for those uncomfortable positions and jobs and the thing is too with broadcasting is honestly it's just reps. Mm-hmm. It's not rocket science. It's like once you get comfortable and have done enough reps.
Right.
And those butterflies that, you know, you're like, this is crazy. I don't know if I could do this. All of a sudden you're like, I love this. I can totally do this.
Yeah.
Like I actually like when I get to a situation in live telecast and everything goes awry and you're like, yes.
Yeah.
Finally, I feel nervous again. Like you're trying to clean up the shit show, but it's
so
reps. It's reps. And honestly, it's doing other things. Like you said, like I know you've talked about wanting to maybe even do a morning show, which I could totally see you doing. You'd be amazing so at that. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that kind of fun stuff, like push for that. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, the people who make the decisions want to kind of fit you into this like, no, you're an athlete. You should do soccer. You played soccer. Why would a soccer player be doing that? It's like, no. And so you can rewrite that script, which is, I think, much more doable now.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I would love that. And also to talk about like lifestyle and fashion and culture and food
all those things
and other
you love,
things,
yeah.
Like day-to-day stuff, like as even a mom and like a woman and, you know.
Totally.
All the things, that would be really fun for me.
And I will say you have to keep throwing that at the wall, right? Mm-hmm. Like in telling people that and especially like just reaching out and saying, this is what I want to do. Like keep saying it to the universe because then people will hear it and then they'll go, oh, okay, yeah, I can see her doing that and I understand that. So I love that you're thinking broader. And then you can decide. Like then you figure out like what you love and, oh, no, this didn't work. I don't want to do that. I don't love this.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you. I will.
You're thinking all the right things.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been good. I'm glad I actually do have something to do, right? Like a lot of people end their career. And so I'm super grateful that I have something to do now. There's a transition that's a little bit easier than maybe for some other people who might not have had this type of path. So I'm really grateful and I'm really lucky and I know that. And so I'm going to really take a lot of care in these new positions because I understand that it's not given to everybody. And so I know I have a growth mindset and lots to learn and
good.
I'm really appreciative of the opportunities that are coming.
We got to get you with Beth Moens.
She's
the one who kind of taught Julie the lay of the land with color commentary.
Oh, I know where you're going.
Beth created a sign that said STFU. And she would hold it up when Julie was talking too much.
Shut the fuck up. reason we just taped it to the wall every time we do a telecast. I'm like, okay, okay, I know. I keep talking. I can't stop talking. God.
You're like, note taken.
And now I get people saying, you weren't talking that much on that telecast. I'm like, let the game breathe, people. You complain I talk too much, and then when I don't talk enough, you're telling me I'm not talking enough.
You have a lot to say. People need to listen.
I know you're covering right now Gold Cup.
Yes, I'm.
Oh, how is, and yeah, what, like, you're, and so you're watching this kind of transformation of the women's team, and we won't talk too much on that, but I do want to kind of get, pick your brain on that. What are you most excited? What are you thinking with that U.S. women's team? I know the Mexico game was,
oh my gosh,
not so bueno.
Honestly,
I saw Dos. I was actually on a plane flying, so I didn't see it live, and I saw Dos a Cero, and I was like, oh, we beat them 2-0. And then I was like, wait, what?
I know, but Mexico was like unreal.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That
was the best
really
game
good.
They probably ever played. I was really happy for them because
yeah,
they've come a long way, and for them,
yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Like, for me, it's more so all the shit off the field that they have to deal with. That now yeah. It reminds me of us, and you know this so well because you paved the way to do all the things and be able to multitask, and you fight for what you deserve, and then you also have to win. So
yeah,
it's like proving that they can beat the best teams in the world and do it in such a fashion with quality and consistency and fight. And they were good. I was like, this is great for them, because now maybe their federation will listen a little bit.
Oh, God, maybe. I know.
Doubtful right now, but I mean, yeah, if they keep up this pace.
Yeah. And then you get the energy of like the nation behind them. Like they love, yeah, and if they can be successful, mm-hmm, I mean, even just a game like that where they're outplaying the U.S. and not only winning that game, I mean, they were good.
Good. And yeah, that was really cool to see, because they hadn't beat us since 2010, that one game on that baseball field in Mexico and Cancun right before.
Yeah, you were there, right?
I was there. Yeah. I was watching from the bench, but I was there. It's just nice to see how far they've come, and these young, talented women that they have on their team have really thrived. Yeah. And I can see that. So that was enjoyable. But on the other side for us, we have such good players. The young talent is insane, yeah, to me. I just feel like, of course, against a Dominican Republic and an Argentina, you're going to play well, right? Because they are difficult to break down and beat, but that consistency has to be shown then against the best teams in the world. So mm-hmm, yes, we can beat these like lesser teams, but then how can we continue to play that way against the better teams? But I think with Emma coming in, it's gonna put fire underneath of some of these younger players who might not have had that before. And if they're not going to play well and do their job, she will just find somebody else who can. And mm-hmm, I think with her being that strong personality and having that bluntness and like honesty and know exactly how she wants to play, I think that's going to benefit them tremendously moving forward. So I'm excited because I know the talent. I know that we are capable of playing a certain way. Now it's just having to build those relationships and really put that fire underneath of people who are willing to step up and actually now prove, mm-hmm, that they deserve to be out there consistently.
Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on Trailblazing Women. Because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com. Yeah, that younger group is good. They really are. That was a bummer about Mia Fishel too. I felt so awful for her. And she was playing well. And
so well. Even Kat, you know? Kat,
yeah, I know.
I hope she can get back out there. Yeah. And I mean, the versatility of all those players on the front line is crazy to me. It's like, you just literally, if I were still playing, I'd be like just giving them the ball all day long.
Yeah. I know.
I'm just going to sit back here.
Here you go, Jaden. Just go.
Yes. Yeah. I am going to give the best players the ball, and that's it. And I'll just be here just
directing.
Yeah, just directing. Literally, that's it.
Is there a part of you that would love to play for Emma Hayes?
I would love. I went up to her at the FIFA Best, and I was like, well, if I would have known a little earlier, I wouldn't have announced my retirement. Could have got in there one last, you know.
I want to play for Emma Hayes.
No, they got it.
I wish she was coming over a little earlier than into May, but I get it. I get it. And if you can, if that's how you can get her, then I think that's the right decision, too.
I
you obviously
too.
Get her, too.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So. But yeah, it's going to be a tight turn.
2 months, but it can be done. Look at what Juan did in like 8 months with us.
True.
I mean, everyone thought, oh, why are you starting preseason so late? And everyone's like, what? We're fine. There's like a whole plan, and there's a periodization plan, and there's just like everything's laid out. Don't you guys worry. And then we get 8 months later and we're like buzzing. So I think it'll be okay.
Every season I get my mind blown without fail, and it's already happening in preparing for this interview. Mm-hmm. You've been open in interviews about talking about your healing journey.
Mm-hmm.
And even early on in this interview, you brought up childhood trauma and that these are things that you are actively working on.
Yes.
And the reason I bring it up is because I have never seen an athlete, a pro athlete, so close to their playing days talking about this. And from the outside, it sounds like you're working on some hard shit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to express to you was actually appreciation and gratitude for your honesty.
Thank you. I feel like we have to start normalizing mental health and trauma, because everyone is carrying some type of trauma and trying to heal their inner self. And me, my little inner Allie, as a child and a teenager, and then also, you know, now. And so I think there's different versions that I've grown into in my life. And I feel like I've always had soccer as a tool to not brush everything under the rug, but to just go out there and forget about everything else and just play with freedom and fun and focus, and not really deal with the hard stuff, and solve some of that trauma along the way. And now I feel like in this last year, a lot of it was coming to the surface, whether I recognized it before or not early in my playing days, but I always had soccer to just not think about it. And so now it's hitting me like a ton of bricks. And so I feel like having a therapist and talking about mental health for athletes and just human beings in general is really important. And we should start normalizing it, because all of us, we need each other to survive. We all have trauma, some way, shape, or form. It's almost inevitable, especially generational trauma that we deal with. And so I think it's just important to make people aware, and then, you know, others might have a better understanding about where you're coming from and your experiences and who people are as individuals and, you know, what they've been through. I think really helps get the best out of people, because you have a better understanding of each other. And I think that's why my team was so wonderful this year, because we kind of understood each other on a deeper level and allowed that space. And allowed each other that emotional capacity to do so. So I think it's nice to talk about it, because if you don't talk about it, it just stays inside. And you have to talk about that trauma and that hurt in order to start to heal. So thank you for saying that. I really value that now. And I think I said this in the Self article, where I think it's important now that I have these deeper conversations with my friends, even, you know, with my best friends from the national team over the years. Like, now we're starting to have really deep conversations about just how we react to certain things, or, you know, our thoughts and feelings towards how someone's acting, or, you know, a job or an environment that we're in, or the way our nervous system feels around certain people. Yeah. Like, these are conversations now that I'm having, or, hey, like, my parents said this the other day, or my, you know, like, I'm having to deal with that, or my partner or husband or wife said this, like, how am I, why am I reacting this way? Like, we all have, like, you know, struggles and problems and issues, but it's important, I think, for us to just have deeper conversations. I think it's about time. And so that's why it's so nice to feel that support and lean on each other.
That's incredible to hear. And in my therapy journey, I had a moment with my therapist where I was like, every week I'm learning something. It's like every single week. And she said to me, lean into the amazement. And so I was wondering, in maybe the span since your retirement to now, and you've got this fresh start, have you had a lean in to the amazement moment about yourself and what you've learned about yourself or your life?
Yes, I've had multiple breakthroughs. I think the biggest breakthrough that I have had is probably just feeling safe around certain people, and then that safety allows me to be the best version of myself. So learning specific reasons why now in adulthood that I don't feel safe, that stemmed from my childhood family dynamic. And so I can relate a lot to what happened as a child in my home. Not that it was all bad, but specific things. And then now I recognize it in my adulthood and I'm more aware, which I don't think without therapy, I would have never been able to recognize. I don't want to get into, you know, too specific.
No, no need just like to.
That's like a topic that I think just safety for me and feeling like I can express myself and feeling seen and heard in a way that now I have a better understanding of how I want to be seen and heard rather than, not being able to really understand that or be aware of that before ever. And I feel like lighter because now I know exactly what I want and who I want to be around, and the people who I don't want to be around and don't want in my life, I think it's very clear for me. So I'm very conscious of that.
Yeah. So good. I'm so happy for you.
Well, thank you.
And you've been through a lot, my friend, and I know this has been a windy road, so that you're in a good space and feeling better.
Worth it. It's rewarding at the end, right? Because I don't think I'd ever be here if I never was really pushed to the limits of myself. Yeah. You know, I'm sure you understand too. Yeah.
Good perspective.
Well, Jules, you said windy road. Just go. You have to do it.
Take me down a road that's a little bit windy.
You can sing.
Oh, yeah. Give me some Zach Bryan.
Do you do karaoke?
Well, usually my karaoke song is Summer Lovin', Have Me a Plan.
That's so interesting because I have a question in the Lynn game about karaoke.
Oh,
believe
weird.
It or not.
Okay. Weird.
Allie, here's the deal. You are going head to head with Julie in a trivia game.
Oh, gosh.
Five questions, best of five wins. The good news, it's all multiple choice. I'll give you three options.
Okay.
If you know the answer at any point, you can chime in. And if you could let us know what your chiming in method is, what noisemaker you've got.
Because I'm moving recently into my new place, I have a Phillips screwdriver mini and my coffee mug.
That's perfect.
Gonna be
tacky. That works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're welcome.
Jules, what do you have?
Because I have a dog that does not like when I use squeaky toys, I've gone to my British phone booth coin thingy. Can you hear that?
Yeah. Okay, got good. It.
I'm ready. And this is, I need to like, I have to stretch it out.
Okay. Well, I'm nervous. Okay. You're probably going to win.
Okay. I probably am, Allie. I'm really good at this.
Yeah, I probably am.
theme of this Lynn game is come on, Greyhounds.
Come on, Greyhounds.
All Ted Lasso questions.
Okay. Oh, I didn't even watch Ted Lasso.
Oh, stop
oh,
it.
No.
I know, but I met Jason at my retirement party and also hung out with him at karaoke with Pino
come
and Sue.
On. I love me some Jason.
There's hope, I think, because these questions are really deep cuts. So it's not that Julie would know them right away. She has watched all of the episodes. So a strategy could be see if Julie gets it right. And if she doesn't, then it's 50-50 for you.
You just guess.
Okay.
Question one. Phoebe's mom, aka Roy Kent's sister, appeared in season two as this character. Okay. Is it A, Dr. Sharon's ER doctor, B, a rowdy fan at May's pub, or C, Rebecca's niece?
B, Julie. A rowdy fan at the pub.
Incorrect. Allie, your choices are Dr. Sharon's ER doctor or Rebecca's niece?
Rebecca's niece.
Incorrect.
I didn't think A was going to be the very first one.
I never got that one. That is a deep cut, is right. Okay.
Question two.
Zero.
Speaking of Phoebe, and Allie, you'll learn that Phoebe is Roy Kent's niece. What right. issue did Phoebe have in the season two Christmas Day episode that Roy and Keeley helped her resolve? Was it A, the hiccups, B, an upset stomach from eating too much ice cream, or C, bad breath? Julie.
C, bad breath.
Correct.
No, I was going to say that. If you didn't answer correctly.
Question three. In the series finale, last episode ever, what book is Ted reading on the plane ride back to the United States? Is it A, How to Change Your Mind, The New Science of Psychedelics, B, The Gifts of Imperfection, or C, Untamed? Allie.
B.
Incorrect.
No!
I think I would have remembered if he was reading Untamed. So I'm going A.
Correct.
Yeah! All right, 2-0.
Question four. What is the name of Ted's upstairs neighbor? Is it A, Ms. Johnsos, B, Ms. Shipley, or C, Mr. Dominic?
I don't know. I'm going C. Mr. Dominic.
Incorrect.
Okay. B.
Correct.
Yes! I was waiting for her to nail it down for me.
Very good strategy.
So
wait, was that the last question?
2-1. No, this is question
five.
Oh,
you could tie it. Creed.
We could tie
tiebreaker.
Okay.
This is the karaoke question. Question five. In season one, what song did Coach Beard sing at karaoke? Was it A, Wide Open Spaces by The Chicks, B, Wonderwall by Oasis, or C, Bad Romance by Lady Gaga?
B, Wonderwall.
Incorrect.
I've never wanted to tie so much in my life.
So I can give you the option. A, Wide Open Spaces, or C, Bad Romance.
Would it be a Lady Gaga? Wide Open Spaces is such a good hit.
You're trying to get Lynn to give you a...
Okay.
I see
I'm so
what
rude.
You're
I'm
doing.
Really, I am rooting for you. I am
see
rooting
what
for
you're
you.
Doing, Craig. Would it be a Lady Wide Open Spaces?
Incorrect.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, for sure, A. It was Lady Gaga. I could see him singing Wide Open Spaces.
I just would like to give a shout out to any Ted Lasso fan listening who got all five right. High five from me.
Yeah, those were good deep cuts. Plus, I can't remember shit, and that's no surprise to Lynn. She knows this stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, Most pressing questions, Allie.
What is your favorite coffee spot in New York?
The coffee spot I love to go to is called Paper Planes, and they support Gotham and me and the team, and they're amazing. Oh,
nice.
Do you walk in and they know your order? Are you at that level?
They have a scarf in the window that says "Thank you, Kriegs" from the retirement game. It was so cute.
Bless them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Kriegs, I feel like I asked you this before, but again.
Yeah.
Thank you, menopause. I cannot remember anything. Why did you choose number 11?
Probably besides looking up to you all these years. My mom wore, I think she wore 9 or maybe she wore 11 in college. Basketball, aww. She played basketball. Uh-huh. And then in college, I just doubled it because that was the only number available. So I think it was in relation to my mom, her basketball number.
Okay.
And then that was like the number that
I mean,
was
who open. Wants to be number 9, right?
I know.
No one was number 9. I don't even know who played on our team who was number 9.
No. Yeah, useless number. That was the number on the national team. I don't know who had it after you.
I don't either. Wait.
It was probably passed around for a while because no one really could fill your shoes.
Oh, yeah. That was definitely it.
Yeah, everyone's like, I don't want to take it.
No, then you got it. And I was like, yay. And now Sophia Smith has it. And I was like, yay.
It's nice.
Did Sophia take it from you? Was she the next one? Was there someone in between? I couldn't remember that either.
Oh, yeah.
It's good lineage.
So I'm so happy she has it.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. Samesies. Mm-hmm.
3 good peeps, you know?
Right. Okay, high, low, cheer. We used to do this around the dinner table with my kids.
Okay.
I would say we don't do it as much because they're a little older, but this is a good one when your kids get a little bit older. We used to ask them their high of the day, their low of the day, and the cheer is for someone they're grateful for.
Yeah.
And they used to love it. Now they're like, Mom, I'm a teenager.
They're like, okay.
So it's going to be high of your career, low of your career, and the cheer is for someone who helped you along the way.
Okay, easy. This is the high of my career is always just being able to continue these lifelong friendships with the women that I've met along the way, which I don't know, in the moment you don't think it's going to be anything, but when the universe brings you together and you win championships and you're, you know, basically like forced friends, you really find some gems. And I'm so grateful for that. So that's the high, I think, meeting awesome women. And then the low was probably, I would say, getting injured and not being able to play in London when we won. So when I tore my ACL, that was probably the lowest.
2012.
Yeah, because mentally that was really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cheer, my best friend in the whole world who used to be on my teammate when we were 7 years old to age 18, Liz Mumley. And also through my separation this past year, she came up like a week earlier than expected once the news broke, and she came and stayed with me for like a 2-week period. And I didn't even have to ask her. She said, I literally got a phone call and she says, I'm already on my way. And that was, you know, but she's been there, World Cups and big tournaments and all the games that I've played in DC and even in New York and Orlando. She's come to everything. Like, her support has been pivotal in my career and personal life since I was 7. We met when we were 7. So,
And you play together starting from the age of 7?
Yes. Yeah. My dad was our coach, and her dad was a coach too, helping out like an assistant and then turned manager. And it was fun. We stuck together. 8 of us stuck together till we were 18 years old. And so Prince William Sparklers, shout out.
The Sparklers?
Sparklers. Amazing. And I still know the cheer, by the way.
Let's hear it.
Well, here we go.
Can it rival my Green Machine cheer?
No, 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 nobody messes with the Green Machine.
Was that your team?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We were the Sockerettes. Okay. We were the Sparklers. Yeah.
Okay. S-S-P-S-P-A-R-K-L-E-R-S. Oh, yes, because we are the best girl sparklers. And that's how you had to say it.
S-S-P-S-P-A-R-K-L-S. S-S-P-S-P-A-R-K-L-R-E-S. I don't think I have that at the end right. S-S-P-S-P-A-R-K-L-E-R-S.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. I have yet to find, until this episode, a cheer that rivaled my messes with the green machine. That one's close.
That was my exact thought.
Yeah.
The similarities between you and Allie are honestly kind of scary. Just sort of your mentality with competitiveness, wearing number 11, going into broadcasting.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I wish I could talk to her more. I miss her. All right, takeaway, Lynn, you start.
My takeaway is right off of what you just said. I really enjoyed talking with Allie, and let's make it a weekly occurrence.
Yeah, we could check in on where she is with the house.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's doable. How Sloan and Ocean are doing. All right, Allie, let's get that done.
What's yours,
we
Jules?
We can talk about broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
I was just really impressed that transition from, as we know, from professional athlete to shoot, I got to make a living and in the real world and figure out what my next career is. I was really impressed on where she was. She had such a good perspective on diversifying what she does, being willing to try new things, wanting to look outside of soccer, which I think is really important. I think we get pigeonholed as soccer players or professional athletes in whatever sport you're in of you should go to that, right? Like you need to get out of that lane and try different lanes. And it takes people a while. It took me a while, I know, to figure that out. So I love that she was there. Like I feel like that transition is going to be a good one for her. And she's there given all of the turbulence that she's experienced in this last, you know, year. So, yay, Allie.
Yeah, go, Allie, go.
Go, Allie, go.
I have a very topical questions permitted based on what you just said.
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay. This comes from Lily, who is a JFSLA alum.
Lily! I love JFSLA alums chiming in.
Lily asks, I love how she phrased this, how did you get big gigs on ESPN or even apply for a job there? When I'm older, I want to work in sports broadcasting and be just like y'all.
Aw, Lily. Big gigs.
Big,
how do you get big gigs?
Big gigs.
Well, it's a lot easier, Lily, when you come from a national team because they want your perspective on things. So I think that helped for sure, but by no means is that the only way to get in. But I think would have been super valuable for me is to have more of a background in journalism and broadcasting and have maybe even majored in that. I mean, who knew it helped to actually learn about your profession before you do your profession? So, I mean, I kind of jumped in with 2 feet and learned as I went, but I think to get really good at television and being a reporter or broadcaster or journalist, you have to study your trade. And so, I do wish I had done more of that in college instead of pre-med. Why did I do that? But Lily, we need more awesome women in sports journalism. So I do hope you go down that path. That would be fabulous. And that's why it was so fun, actually, in the episode, to your point, Lynn, being on point.
It's what I do, Jules.
To talk with Allie about that, because we do. We need young women in there. So,
well, I have some bullet points that I can share.
Mm-hmm.
Because I needed to write out bullet points to ask, how did I get a gig at ESPN? At least to where I am today, required some bullet points. And I don't even think you know the story. because how I originally got into ESPN was as a production assistant. And mm-hmm. I graduated from Notre Dame. And what I did was I found every alumni of Notre Dame that I could who worked at ESPN. And this was pre-email. So I sent a cover letter and a resume. And I asked for advice and a phone call. Didn't ask for a job. And Tim Corrigan, who heads up the NBA, he put my resume in the mix for a production assistant job. I got that job, worked in Bristol as a production assistant for 2.5 years. Then I went to grad school at Northwestern for broadcast journalism. To your point, Julie, I reached a point where I saw that if I really wanted to pursue broadcast journalism, that grad school was a great option. And then it's a windy road. And I did intentionally say windy, if you want to.
Hey, man, I roll, that's a little bit windy.
So you ready for some winding? Okay. I worked in local news in my hometown of Cleveland as a multimedia journalist. So that means I reported, shot, wrote, and edited my own stories. One-man band. I'm going to fast forward here. Started freelancing for ESPNW. That's how I got my foot back in the door at ESPN. And how I got that was I sent an email. Now we're in email times. To the editor-in-chief at the time, Allison Overholt. And in that email, I included 20 story ideas for ESPNW, and then I cold called her. Then you and I...
Good job.
Thank you. Then you and I met. That's how you and I met. And so I just... The moral of the story, I would say, Lily, is it does take a lot of grit. It takes a lot of grit. And something I thought of in putting this together is what is amazing is that relationships I had from when I was a production assistant are still going today and influencing my current trajectory.
Yeah, that's everything. In any field is relationships. But yeah, that's super interesting.
Yeah, and that's the Cliff Notes version.
And then someone put sugar in your iced tea and then boom, you're off.
I was introduced to coffee when I moved to Bristol. I didn't drink coffee, but there's a Dunkin' Donuts on every corner in Bristol. And my gateway drug was French vanilla.
That was always a problem for me.
French vanilla coffee from Dunkin' Donuts with cream and sugar. And I think that means it's something like 4 sugars. Now I don't actually put any sugar in my coffee, but yeah. My wine you wrote included a sugar-fueled coffee in Connecticut.
Thank you, Lily, for that awesome question. And Dope Village, thank you. It's so great to be back. And thank you for being such loyal listeners and for your support. Lynn and I are busy working hard to bring you another season filled with trailblazers who will make you think, make you laugh, and make you even snort on occasion. So thank you for Ally for its continued support, of course, and to Kate Diaz for our theme music. And as always, kids, remember, sing it with us.
Laughter permitted.
The goggles barely even worked.